And welcome to the Live Fire Media Show. Your hosts tonight are the always entertaining Hunter Elliott of RangeHot.com, coming in from North Carolina, and I'm Dave Kowalka, a.k.a. Dave from High Point, coming at you from Southwest Ohio. Join us as we're going to talk about some guns, some gear, some games, and more.
Why don't I get an a.k.a.?
Because you're Hunter Elliott from RangeHot.com.
Right, but I mean, I could be something else cool, too.
Okay, well, let's see. How do nicknames work, man? Do you create nicknames and people do it for you?
I don't think you can create a nickname.
Exactly. So my day from High Point, that was not my doing. That was the guys at WLS. We like shooting. Always refer to me as Dave from High Point. So, yeah, there you go.
My friends used to call me Cornbread.
Okay. I really should do with that one.
Awesome. I don't want that to be AKA Cornbread.
AKA Cornbread. All right. That sounds like a pretty good right there for me. AKA Corn.
That's an example of what I don't want to happen.
Yeah. Well, remember how we just talked about nicknames? Like, you don't have control over that shit. You know, it's just what sticks.
You know, that's true. And speaking of which, you remember the last time we were talking? Do you see what I changed your name to?
Should be Iron Man. Yes. Because actually, I have all the data information set for episode 8, because this is 9. I have it titled, I Am Iron Man.
and your ringtone is Iron Man.
I am Iron Man. Yeah. Black Sabbath, that's awesome. Because I got your feels that good.
Celebrate that's awesome. Your lack of humanity.
That's awesome. Well, that's fine with me, man. So, I'm using my headset mic here again, because come to find out, my good mic,
how much
died.
Is that in your mouth?
I'm not going there, but yeah, this mic though, we like shooting guys told me about these mics. They were like $100-$150. It was reasonable, but yeah, it took a shit on me. And going online talking to other people about it, they're like, yep, I had one for a couple of years and it just quit working. So I reached out to the company, asked him what's up. Now I'm waiting to hear back today. That's when I just sent the email. So hopefully it's, I don't know. They might be like, yeah, sure. Or sorry, it's a piece of shit.
Well,
but now this headset though, I've been using this thing for like, dude, for years.
How much
gaming with my friends? This whole thing was like $100-$150.
I don't think you heard what I said.
No, I didn't then.
I said, how much of that can you get in your mouth?
Oh my God. Why are you so gay sometimes?
I can get my whole fist in my mouth. Do you believe that?
That's good for you, man. That's a pretty awesome feat.
However, what's more awesome is figuring it out.
Yeah, that is more awesome, figuring it out.
Actually, that's all conjecture. It's never.
Yeah, no shit. Move my window over here a little bit so it looks like I'm actually looking at you in the camera, but I'm not really. But
oh, yeah, thanks.
Well, so I am looking at you, but my camera's right here. So it's like, you know, I don't want my head turned like this the whole damn time because that's annoying.
Riveting.
Yeah, it is riveting, is it not? I mean, come on, man.
So let me tell you how stupid I am. Let's go ahead and start this off.
Oh, this is already getting good. Damn.
This is how stupid I am. So, you know, I bought that 89 F-350.
Yep.
And I've been, you know, and it's a good truck. Had some problems. We've probably got about 2/3 of everything sorted out. So I bought it to pull my stunt grinder with. So the other day I drove it pretty good little ways, and I was leaving the job, and it was a puddle below the transfer case, about yay big.
Okay.
And I'm like, man, I know that transfer case ain't leaking. So I stick my finger in it. And I smell it, and it's gear oil. But the transfer case and the transmission on my truck, even though it's manual, runs Mercon ATF, spec'd from Ford.
Okay.
So I'm like, why is there gear oil below my transfer case? I know it's got ATF in it. But I was on the job. I was tired. I'm like, you know what? I'm not gonna worry about it right now. So I drive home. And then I just kind of forget about it. So I'm grinding stumps today, and I'm loading my stump grinder up on a trailer. And man, there's a puddle of fluid like yay big under my transfer case. And I'm like, okay, now I'm thinking, all right, I got to, this can't be good.
Yeah, right.
And I get under there, and I smell it. It's gear oil. It's, you know, gear oil's got that real kind of pungent, and it's right. Gear oil. I'm like, where, in a, you know, there's no gear oil. I mean, I got gear on the front and the rear end, which is, you know, 8 or 6 feet away from this massive puddle. I'm like, you know, is it now, is the pinion leaking and maybe it's slinging it up on the bed and running down and dripping? And I look up, the bottom of my truck is coated in gear oil.
Oh, shit.
Oh, shit is right. So, fortunately, man, I was probably 2 miles from home.
Right.
And I'm like, well, I'm not even going to take the damn, I'm not even going to check the fluid in my transfer case. Because I know it's ATF. Okay, but there's a lot of gear oil leaking maybe out of my rear end. Now, we just changed the gear oil.
I bet it's the rear end.
A little overfull. So I'm like, okay, even if it's leaked this much, I'm still probably okay to get home.
Right.
But at this point, Dave, I'm beginning to panic a little bit. So
again, you're only 2 miles out?
Oh, shit. Just a couple miles. So I'm like, I know I can make it home, but I mean, where's this is a lot of gear oil. I mean, like the whole underside of my truck that I'm looking at, it's covered. It's dripping down.
Jesus.
And I'm like, you know, and so I'm like, well, the pinion is leaking bad, and it's slinging gear oil all up under my truck. But there was no oil under the rear end. I don't know, but now my mind's on, let's get home and let's figure this fucking mess out, because we're talking about, you know, this could be thousands of dollars.
So this is a Ford, right?
Be careful.
It's a Ford, right? It's a question.
It's a '89 F-350.
'89. Okay, so fixed, repaired daily still holds true. Okay.
Keep it up, Mal. So anyhow, so I drive straight home. As soon as I get home, I put a clean piece of cardboard under my truck.
Right.
And, you know, I wait a minute or two as I'm unloading my stomach grinder, and sure enough, that ATF starts, or excuse me, gear oil starts showing up under my transfer case. So I'm like, oh my God, this is going to be awful. So I go inside, I get a bright light, and I lay under my truck, Dave, and I shine it up under my truck, and it's just gear oil just raining down.
What the hell?
And I'm like, what the hell could this be? And so I'm racking my brain for like 5 minutes. I'm Googling it, you know, and I'm just like, Google's not, you know, there's like, well, your transfer case uses ATF. Yeah, no shit. And I changed the fluid in my transmission and my transfer case right when I got the truck. So I know it's ATF. But I'm like, I've got a major leak and it's bad. And it's all over my fuel tank.
Right.
So I get up, and I'm kind of in a flying panic, because I'm like, oh my God, it's more truck, and this is thousands of dollars, maybe.
Yeah.
I open the door, and I'm looking around. I lean my seat forward. And when I change the rear end oil in my truck, I put a half full bottle of gear oil behind the seat. And I forgot about it, and it turned over and spilled out. And it was leaking. Like, you know, the Ford cabs, they've got holes in them where they were, you know, machined, and they put rubber plugs in them.
Right.
Well, some of my rubber plugs, being an 89, are kind of – well, they used to be very very hard. Now they're nice and plush and soft.
Ugh. I was waiting for thinking how you'd left a can of oil somewhere, some damn how, and you're getting it under there, and not exactly, but not quite expected, but still similar enough. Jesus.
What an idiot, man. Now, granted, when I found it, I was like, whew, oh my God, I'm so thankful. But, you know, all the ride home, and like, the truck is noisy. It's
you're panicking all left and right.
So it's noisy. The first and second gears are the first gear is straight cut. I think second gear is straight cut, and they're not synchronized. And so, like, it's a noisy ass truck,
right?
But to drive home, every noise that I've been hearing since I bought the thing, I'm like, is that the rear end? Is that the pinion? That's the pinion bearing getting ready to come out. oh my God, my girlfriend's out of town, my mama's out of town, my buddy's on the, this damn thing slings the damn drive shaft. What am I going to do?
Leave it on the side of the road?
Right. But I got my stump grinder. I got my stump grinder behind it.
Oh, shit.
You know, I got a $30,000 stump grinder on a trailer.
They don't leave that behind with it. Good God.
Yeah, I can't leave that behind. And so, anyway, whew, that's how stupid your buddy is. Just
nice. And when was this?
Oh, today.
Oh, just today.
you know, about 5 hours ago.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. What an idiot.
Hump day, man. That's some hump day shit for sure.
And I've got another story about it that's even weirder, if and when you want to hear it.
All right.
Is that so, all right?
If you want to go for it, go for it.
All right, so I'll make this quick.
But you were talking about a Ford, so.
This isn't all me being stupid, okay?
Okay, sure.
So, I'm driving the truck, and this is after I first get it, and it's pushing coolant out of the overflow. And I'm like, nah, that's not normal. So, I do a coolant drain flush, and I fill it back up to the exact amount of coolant.
Right.
And I replace the thermostat, and I replace the radiator cap. And I drive it. Thermostat opens up. When I get home, it's coolant all down the side. And I'm like, you know, I know what it is. It's a head gasket. I got a head gasket blown. And it's that 7.3 IDI is 21.5 to 1 compression. So it's creating a tremendous amount of pressure on the compression stroke. And it's pushing exhaust gas in the radiator, which is overpressurizing it, which is then causing it to overpush coolant into the overflow.
Right.
And that's what it was doing. And I'm like, man, I hope to God. Because if you have a blown head gasket, it blew for a reason. More than likely, the head warped. So, you know, I call my buddy to come over. And essentially what you do is, I don't know if you've seen this tool. It looks like a bicycle pump with a gauge on it. But you take your radiator cap off and you put it on the radiator. Okay. And then you pump up the radiator with whatever pounds pressure. Then you watch the gauge.
Right.
And if the gauge doesn't move, you're golden. So the buddy comes over, Jaime, and we put like 12 pounds of pressure on the cooling system. The radiator cap opens up at 7 pounds. So we put 12 pounds on it. And sure enough, Dave, after probably 2 minutes, you can see the pressure dropping.
Oh, shit.
But it could be a coolant leak. Like, so we go up. Jaime's under the truck, and I'm over top of it. We both got bright lights. And I'm trying to find coolant pushing out of something. You know, please let, you know, and he's.
Yeah, because you think you'd see it somewhere. I mean.
You would hope. Well, here's the deal. If you don't, it means it's pushing it inside.
Oh, right.
Blown head. Shit. So he's under the truck, and I'm on top of the truck, man. And we look until it gets to about 6 PSI. Pump it up again. Keep looking. He's like, Bo, I'm not finding the coolant under here. And I'm looking all on top of the engine, which, you know, and it's dry. And he said, it's pushing coolant in the cylinder. Blown head gasket. And I'm like, you know, this is probably $3,000. And that's he and I do. But I mean, at that point, you got to take the heads in. You got to get them machined.
Right.
Go do a valve job. You know, just, you might as well do all that. If you're going to do that, might as well put a water pump on it. So anyway, and I mean, you know, and I say to myself, I'm like, okay, God, you know, I hear you. This is awful, but I'm not going to get mad. I'm not going to freak out. The good Lord is always looking out for me. He's always blessing me. So whatever happens, it's meant to happen. Maybe he's keeping this truck off the road so I don't get in a wreck. You know, I'm trying to rationalize. And I'm trying not to lose my temper. And I'm trying to, you know, be a good Christian. But I'm still frustrated. And Jaime's like, hey, pump it up to 25 pounds. That much pressure, it's going to push coolant somewhere. We're going to find it.
Right.
Now, the whole time, you know, even driving it, I'm checking my dipstick. I'm not getting any cooling in the oil. It's not blowing white smoke.
Right.
But it's pushing coolant. So I pump it up to 25 pounds, Dave, and it, we're looking, man, and I hear it. And I'm like, okay, man, it's not a blown head gasket.
Right. Woohoo. It's not
serious. Because I can hear it hissing.
It's a connection point seal or something.
No, man. It was a fucking tool where the hose connects to the radiator cap on his pump was leaking air. And I'm like, you fucking bastard. You had me talked into coming over in the morning and starting to pull the heads off his truck. And your fucking brand new tool is leaking air. He goes, no way, man. No way. It's brand new. Nice. So I go to the house. I get some Dawn dishwashing soap.
And yep. Yep.
And I put soapy water around
it. Yep.
It's bubbling out of the
hose. Watch the bubbles. Oh, my God.
And it was pushing coolant because whoever had attached the overflow hose had used a hose clamp. And the little worm gear was conquered. And when you put the radiator cap on, it was holding one side of the radiator cap up off.
Huh.
As soon as the truck started making pressure, it was pushing coolant.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, thank you, God. Thank you. I mean, I went to church last Sunday, bro. I'm telling you. But anyway.
Well, so I can tell you, so I'll roll this with a car bit. So this past weekend, I was down in Camden, Tennessee at the Tactical Response Range.
James Yeager's place.
Yes, his place. Yeah, I met his daughter, actually. But we were there for Student of the Gun. It was Paul Markle's was it martial application of the pistol was the class we did. And work-related things, so I rented a car. And you
used the high point, right?
I'll get to that. Okay. It's car part right now. It's car stories. You shut up.
Oh, whoa, I'm sorry. I'm getting excited.
No, so rented a car. I had to take my FJ down there. And ran just a standard SUV because, like, when I've traveled and we're carrying a lot of, like, work shit, banners, a lot of guns and crap, I'll get, like, a full-size SUV, which I kind of tend to find I prefer, like, the Jeep, like, the Jeep Wagoneer, like, the Hemi, the Jeeps will just shit and get. I had a Ford Explorer, the last one going to GOS. That one was shit and get, and that was all right. Time before that, I had a Lincoln Navigator. Fucking hated that thing.
Really?
Oh God, man! All the annoyance. Like I drive with my hand. I'm a 1 o'clock. You know, like holder with my left hand.
Yeah.
And that was blocking a camera that couldn't see my face. So it was like setting off alarms. Like, look at the road. Look at the road. Look at the road. I mean, there's so many alarms and alert things in the Navigator. Dude, no way. You couldn't pay me to take a fucking Navigator. It was so annoying. And even it's like. Infotainment system versus its manual hard controls. I hated it. I absolutely hated it. But like I said, then a year later getting the Ford, I was like, this is way more streamlined. I like this thing. I'll drive this one, you know, much happily. The Explorer over the Lincoln, but I still like the Jeep, the Wagoneer over both of those. So anyways, not taking a lot of stuff this time. So I was like, I'll just get a standard size. What?
Is it just you or you got anybody from MKS with you?
For this trip right now?
Yeah, what we're talking about.
Nobody else from MKS, but my buddy Ryan was with me.
Okay, I'm tracking.
Yeah, so a lot of times if we're going to GOS, we're usually taking, you know, additional supplies for the show. And it's just nice to have a big vehicle when you're driving 8 hours one way.
Absolutely.
So this time it's just me, just Ryan and I, our own personal kit and gear. And I rented a standardized SUV. And I hate rental companies, man. You've got, you know, intermediate SUV, standard SUV, full SUV, extra large SUV. It's like, dear God, like it. That and the fact that damn near every car that isn't a car anymore is an SUV, but really, they're a fucking car.
Right.
They're slightly raised up. They have slightly more wheel clearance, but they're a fucking car. So what we ended up getting was a Chevy Equinox. I was like, okay. That's
a tiny little SUV.
Yeah, and that's standard size.
Yeah, that's a like, tiny little.
That's what I thought when I saw it, and I was like, whatever. I get it. I'm like, okay, typical Chevy layout controls. It's fine. Infotainment system sucks for even Bluetoothing it. It's I'm better off using my phone for everything than the actual screen in the car, because it's just it's an economy piece of shit, basically. But on top of that, it's a little four banger. I think it was supposed to be turbocharged or supercharged. I don't know, man. Countless times I got on the highway, I literally had that pedal absolutely floored. Like, immediately. I would say I redlined the damn thing, but it didn't actually have marks for a red line on it. But I couldn't get it to break much more than 5,000 RPMs. But, dude, every time you did that, you thought that thing was going to blow a rod here. And it went, I was like, this thing is such a piece of shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the whole drive down, the whole drive back, another buddy was with me that met us there. So we take my ride to the go get food and stuff, and how easily I would just like gun it. And of course, my one buddy who met me there, he's got a Rivian, you know, electric truck.
Oh,
and
yeah.
talk about massive torque. And he's like, dude, are you flooring this thing? I said, dude, I'm physically flooring it right now. And he goes, sounds like you're gonna blow the engine. I'm like, I know, this thing's a piece of shit. I wouldn't tell anybody to buy a fucking Chevy Equinox unless like a little old man, little old lady that only had to go to the grocery 2 miles away. Just terrible, terrible ride, man.
Well, now that we're on the car subject, I've got a funny anecdote from my father.
Okay.
So we were at a party somewhere, like a neighborhood party. This was, oh God, late 80s, early 90s. And there was a guy there from work that my father just did not like, not even a little bit. Okay. But my dad was pretty cool. You know, he didn't, he was really laid back, but he's like, I don't like this guy. I hate this guy. Gets on my fucking nerves. He's a moron. My father, when it come to anything automotive, body work, you know, he had his own body shop. He was a general manager at a mechanical shop. I mean, he knew mechanical and body work. He was amazing and been doing it his whole life. He just had a knack. And he had no tolerance for people that were idiots but betrayed themselves. Like, if you went in, you're like, hey, look, I don't know what's going on. Can you help me? A lot of times they would get new techs in. It would be a little confused. My father could go out there and kind of get them caught up. As long as they were humble.
Sure.
You know, but they come in there showing their ass. And fresh out of school or what have you. And this guy, from what I gather, was like that. So my dad had been drinking. And he goes, he's like, I'm going to fuck with this guy. Watch this. So he goes outside and he pisses all in front of the guy's car under the radiator. And he goes back in, and I don't remember the guy's name. Let's say it was Bob or something.
Bob.
And he goes, Bob, hey, I was outside, you know, making a phone call, and I walked by your car. Is that your car? The whatever.
Right.
Yeah, in the drive. He's like, it's leaking coolant all over the driveway, like a lot.
Dick move. That's awesome.
And Bob's like, oh, no. Let's check it out. And my old man goes, yes, let's check it out. So the guy goes out there and he's looking. Sure enough, you know, and it
huge puddle.
By now it defoaming on it, running down to the back of the car. And I'm not making this up. The guy takes his finger and through the puddle and goes, it's not sweet like coolant. And he pulled his finger out of his mouth. And my father is like mortified. He's like, yeah, man, I don't know. He's like bringing in a shop. We'll figure
it out. Oh, my God.
And he's like trying not to bust out laughing. And I'm like, Dad, that guy literally just drank your piss. He's like, right? He's like, fuck yeah.
God, my mind goes to Austin Powers. This coffee tastes like shit.
Yeah.
Austin, it is shit.
I was like, oh my God. Ooh. Right when he just, I mean, drug his finger through it. Oh. What idiot. I mean, because coolant is super poisonous. So, you know.
But, I mean, if you're going to touch it, like, smell it to make sure. But otherwise, if it's that big of a puddle, you don't even need to touch it. You can just smell it from there. I mean.
No, he got his finger all in it. Doing the old Lipton, the Pepsi challenge with it.
Oh my God, that's disgusting and awesome.
Oh, You were talking. You were talking my dad. It reminded me. I wish you could have met my father.
Wow. Yeah. That would have been cool.
I'll tell you another quick story. I think you'll find this funny. So my dad was a general manager at Leith Honda. And Leith Honda, everybody knew my dad was into guns and explosives and all kind of crazy shit.
Right.
And so...
was your dad a Marine?
Yes. And he was the section chief for a 155 howitzer. So he was into explosives his whole life.
Right.
And so my dad's office, like the whole mechanical shop of the Honda place was like elongated, like a shop. And like right here at the front was the dispatcher that overlooked the shop. And then to the left was a head, and just past the head was an office with a door. That was my father's office. And he was the GM there, or excuse me, the service manager. And a couple of the damn employees had been dragging ass and, you know, dicking around, younger guys. And my dad is in there. I walk in there, and my father's got a golf ball, Dave. And he's taping it with black electrical tape. He's wrapping a golf ball in black electrical tape.
Okay.
You know, and a lot of times, like, I would hang out with my dad at the Honda shop. And my dad's like, watch this. So he gets enough of it taped up to where it's a little bigger than a golf ball. And there's no white showing. Then he had bought me a model rocket, you know, that you mm-hmm. stick the fuse in and light.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so used to, when you did that, you would go buy like 20 foot of cannon fuse.
Okay.
It's what it was. It was green cannon fuse. You go buy 20 foot of cannon fuse, and it says, you know, like X amount of feet is X amount of seconds. So you take your knife, you cut that, and you stick it in your rocket. He takes about, you know, a 10-inch piece of cannon fuse out of my model rocket kit and sticks it on that golf ball and keeps taping it. Where when he's done, you know, it's 20% bigger than a golf ball, and it's got a damn 10 inches of green fuse sticking off of it. And it's like 1:30. Like they just shuffled in from lunch, and people are staring at their toolbox. They're dicking around. They're trying to get, you know, motivated to go back to work. My old man walks out there. Now he's looking. It's 40 feet. That's probably, I bet it was 10 bays.
Right.
Or six or so, probably more than 40 feet. Hell, probably 60, 70 feet. Dave, he takes that thing and he's like, I am so tired of all these people just fucking around. Nobody wants to fucking work. You go to fucking lunch. Look, you're over there dicking around staring at your fucking toolbox. He's like, you know what? I've had a good life. Fuck all y'all. And lights the fuse. And everybody, like, he has their attention. And he's holding it as the fuse. And he said, it ain't going to just be me this time. And he rears back to Kansas and he throws that thing down the middle of the shop. And let me tell you something, my friend. Never in my born days have I seen a bunch of men move that fast. You know, like in a cartoon where Bugs Bunny's like holding something and takes off and it's still in the air. I saw just a bunch of empty wrenches fall to the ground where those guys run outside.
That's awesome.
And it hit the ground, you know, and rolled around and it burned out. It's funny.
Dude,
But then everybody started filing back in, and my dad takes his knife and cuts the tape off of it, shows him his golf ball. And everybody's laughing and joking, and my dad's just stone faced. He goes, that's your fucking warning.
That's your warning. Dude, could you imagine if anybody, you know, like that pulled out on a shop today? You'd literally have men crying and quitting and HR down your ass because that's just too insinuating violence, or it's being too insensitive to blah, 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 you know.
This was probably 89, man.
Sure.
So, you know, you could do shit back then and get away with
it. Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, you did something like that today.
Oh, God. It'd be such bad news. I mean, it's hilarious, but
he's sued to death.
Yeah.
You know,
That's like we've talked before. It's because people nowadays, people are weak.
Yeah.
Weak and pathetic. That's right. And if you're listening to this and you're weak and pathetic, don't be.
Yeah. Join a gym. Eat a fucking steak.
Yeah, right. Eat a big fucking steak.
You got to bet an ugly woman to get a little bit of ugly woman. I mean, you know.
Yeah, right.
But anyway, I enjoy reliving those. Because, you know, as I'm telling you, the story is playing out. You know, and
oh, yeah.
I'm 7, 8 years old, standing there watching this unfold. And I'm like, Dad, I can't believe you're doing this. He's
like, like, this is awesome.
And he's like, there's no way they're going to quit. Because this shop was air conditioned.
Right.
So, you know, like in Raleigh,
North Carolina. Yeah, it's hot summer days.
This was the Honda and Mercedes-Benz BMW shops were the only shops, I think, in Raleigh that were air conditioned. So, you know, you come inside August 90 degrees outside, you walk in the shop and it's 72 degrees. And you
got right.
Yeah, it was nice.
That's funny.
So anyway, oh, man.
Well, yeah, so, yeah, I was, like I said, I was in Camden, Tennessee then for the weekend doing that 2-day pistol class.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have cut you off. How was that?
Why are you sorry? Shut the fuck up and just roll with it.
Wow.
I'm sorry. I'm still telling people, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Stop being fucking sorry for shit, people. Jesus. And we're just talking heads here, so shut up. We just make a hard cut to it. I was segueing into it from my car issues, then you circle back around, but the story was worth it because that's pretty damn funny shit.
Right. I forgive you.
But no, as you had asked, did I take a high point to this 2-day pistol class? I did, because Paul had actually asked me to bring a YC9 and run it in the class. I was like, yeah, all right. Sure, why not? Well, we left, I don't know, 1 o'clock around Dayton to get down there. It was like 6.5 hour drive. Took us like 8 hours to get down there because it was just massive traffic accidents from north of Cincinnati, south of Cincinnati, all around Louisville, around Nashville. It was the most horrific traffic I think I've ever had driving that short a distance ever. It was nuts.
I wonder what that's all about. Just people.
I think it was just Friday and people and accidents. It just shit happens. It's just the way we caught it. But so we get into the cabin place. I think my other buddy, he was coming from the D.C. area, and he got in like an hour behind us, I think. So as we're waiting for him, I was looking at my holster situation. I was like, oh, shit. I was like, I have on my gun belt, I've got the Safariland QLS fork system. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
No, I don't know nothing about that.
No? Okay. It's just a mounting system. So you take your holster, you put the like mail end fork on it. And then I can easily change my belt rig. I can change holsters out real easily and always have the same draw because I've got this forks. Okay. So Black Rhino Concealment had made me some holsters for a bunch of high points. And I specifically had them do me a large format holster for the like 10 mil 40, 45 guns on a QLS fork. I didn't think to tell them to do me one for the YC9. So I had two holsters planned. The one I forgot here, which was like a pancake style wrapped belt slide holster. Totally forgot it. So that was out. The other holster I had like a Blade Tex like clamshell clip. Or no, it didn't. No. It was just a paddle. It had like a slide through your belt paddle. And I was like, well, there's no room in my equipment. I can't use that. So I was like, screw it. I'll take the QLS fork off the bigger holster, put it in the smaller holster. Good to go. So I take the paddlets on there, take it off, take the QLS fork off, go to set it up. Well, like the two main holes don't line up. I was like, all right, well, let's just get smart this time and like make our own hole. Quick, you know, self-drill with a pocket knife, made myself a good hole, got the screws in, set the QLS fork down in my holster so it's on my belt. I'm like, oh, this is sweet. And while I'm grabbing the YC9, like the grip's like just thick enough to sense I couldn't always really hit the mag release with my thumb without a massive grip shift. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, I like ambi and I like right side for my index finger to hit the release anyways. Well, the YC9 is reversible. Just punch it out, flip it around. I do that and I'm like sitting there hitting the mag release and I'm like, oh, this is sweet. Mag release, sweet. Holster yeah, it's awesome. Like, cool, we'll be good to go. Other buddy gets in town. We found out where Walmart's at. We run and get some quick supplies last minute. And then chill to the shoot on Saturday morning.
So you got there on a Friday, got a room, yeah. So took it easy.
Yeah, had like a little like mini cabin, you know, cottage thing. Chill out for a little bit. Yeah, it was with me and two other buddies then. So my buddy Ryan, who's gone to GOS with me, and my buddy Chad, who's as a lifelong friend, and he's into guns, but he doesn't shoot. But once in a great while, because timing doesn't permit. And I kind of like hit him up last minute. I'm like, dude, you want to do this pistol class? He was like, yeah, that'd be cool. I'm like, all right, meet me here. I've got a cabin. So go to the pistol class, and we go through the introductions, meet everybody else there. There's only like seven of us total. So not a huge class. So you really actually get to meet everybody and get to talk to everybody and get to kind of know everybody, which is even cooler. But we get up on the firing line and we start with the, what was it? Well, he had just a target, had targets put up there. It has thoracic triangle from the, you know, from the bridge of the nose, nipple and back up. It's like put a couple rounds in the thoracic triangle. And I had a red dot mount on the YC9 too. I had a Swamp Fox, I don't know, one of their green dots mounted to it. So I'm coming up, punching out, pow, pow, pow. Like, what the hell? Oh, shit, mag came out. Pow, pow, pow. Oh, shit. Pow, pow, pow. What the hell? And I was like, oh, shit. Because I flipped that mag release around, it's landing right in the middle of my middle finger.
When you're depressing the magazine release.
Yeah. So I was like, and Paul's like, dude, can you fix that? I was like, yeah. Walk off to the side, got my multi-tool out. Punch it out, flip it around, get it going. Like, all right, cool. Pow, 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 pow. Mag change, you know, rack. Pow, 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 pow. Things tearing a beautiful, just like ragged hole, like this thing, to the point where like I wouldn't even see my hits anymore because they were all going through that hole, just eating it up. I'm like, hell yeah, high points kicking ass. Well, then we get to the point where we start doing some little drills, and I come up, and I couldn't even pull the trigger. I'm like, what the shit? I'm like, if you can't pull the trigger on a high point, mag disconnect safety. So I quickly do a quick look in my workspace here, and I see the little gaps. I'm like, tap, rack, pop, 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 pow. Like, that was weird. Whatever. And he's like, all right, do it again so you can get a flawless draw and hit. I was like, sure. Come up, tap, rack, pop, 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 pow. Like, what the shit? And Paul's like, what is going on, man? And I was like, I don't know. I'm like, you know, I'll strip the mag out, put another one in, charge it, pow, 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 break it. I'm standing up, you know, do a 360 to scan my whole area, and then come back and screw it, punch out some more, fire a bit. You know, it was like, everything's fine. Holster up, go top my mags off, come back for another drill, come up and draw, trigger won't break, tap, rack, pow, 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 pow. I was like, wait a minute, mag disconnect safety. Why is my magazine coming out now? Like,
holster.
Bring it back, put it in my holster, because I jerry-rigged that QLS fork for this holster. It wasn't made for it. When it sits in all the way, the mag release is hitting some of the framework and kicking my mag out.
Yeah.
I was just like, you've got to be kidding me. I'm like, this is unreal. And so Paul's like, man, the high point's running. He's like, but I don't want you getting training scars because we're going through all this repetition. He's like, do you have another gun? I was like, I do. I brought it back up. He's like, change it out. I was like, all right, I'll change it out. So I swapped that, went back to my Echelon, my Springfield, and then not a single problem from there. So I was just like, damn it, man. That gun would have made the class just fine. I really wanted to run it the whole damn class. But having to constantly do tap rack every single time it came out of the holster, that shit just was not going to work.
Could you have took your pocket knife and cut a relief area where your magazine release is?
Or I probably could have, but as much time as I spent screwing around, I don't want to create more downtime as they're waiting on a whole class to like shave the shit off.
Was this class or day before class, you know, sighting?
No, this is class. This is the class.
Oh, you know, like, I mean, a lot of classes, like the first 2 hours is sighting in and shaking out your gear.
Yeah. No, this one, it was like we got into it right away. And
oh,
like,
okay.
We're doing it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's what you swap out.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of like the, like my whole experience at Moon's Out with the carbine not being zeroed in. I made sure the dot was zeroed in. That part was fine. But then rigging this holster up, I was completely not even thinking about, you know, interfacing the with the mag release like that. So now I think I'm actually going to reach out to a Black Rhino and be like, hey, man, can I get an actual YC9 holster on a QLS fork specifically so I know it won't hit interfere? And then I think I'm going to try and, like, for High Point, make, like, a video series of doing drills. Like, we talked about doing build drills in general on video. But try and do some High Point stuff like that. And, you know, I still have, like, 500 rounds from the ammo we shot. Basically burn through the other 500 rounds with the YC9 and be like, yeah, here you go. I now have got 1,000. Well, I shouldn't say 1,000. I've got, you know, several hundred rounds for this gun at this point, because the gun works. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
It just sucked to have that kind of equipment failure that you couldn't do anything else really on the fly. Cause yeah, had we had more downtime, maybe I could have, but it was just like class is hanging up now because they're waiting for me to do shit.
Yeah.
Just change guns. Yeah. I mean, and everybody was cool. Like they were like, is the gun not working? I was like, no. Don't any one of you who have already been bad mouthing High Point think the High Point's not running. It's my setup problem that I rigged this thing together and it's not working, because the holster I should have brought was my pancake style holster and it has clearly cut away from the mag release.
Right.
That would have been fantastic, but shit happened.
You didn't want some asshole seeing that and then going back and be like, man, that guy, High Point didn't run into class.
That's exactly right. You know, so I made it abundantly clear to everybody there. I'm like, no. This is me. My issues have caused this, not the gun. The gun's doing its job, you know.
Did they seem to accept that okay?
Yeah, everybody seemed pretty cool. They're like, yeah, look, like, because you're tearing it up with the target. You know, I'm like, well, yeah, because these things work, you know. But then the rest of the class as a whole, though, was a pretty damn cool and entertaining time, I would say.
Good, man, good. You know, classes are, I think we've talked about this before, but it's always good to take classes. I got a class Saturday with Green Ops.
Nice.
At H205 Farms in Dunn, North Carolina. It's an 8-hour defensive pistol class. And it's kind of a basic class.
Right.
But I'm not too proud to take it.
Right. No. What's Rick Crawley from Achilles Heel Tactical, he talks about that. Says, like, you should probably take a basic pistol rifle class, like, once a year, because it's always good to come back to just the simplicity of fundamentals and do that stuff. No matter how tactical and how high speed, low drag you are, go do basic, you know, class to remind yourself, you know, skill sets. And I kind of agree with that.
Fundamentals. And, you know, here's the thing. If you got a series of instructors you kind of cycle through, everybody teaches a little different.
Yes.
So, you know, one technique you may struggle with one instructor.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I've talked about this before, Roger Pettit.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine, combat injured Marine, I've worked with him. He had a company called PC Shooting.
Yeah.
And we taught defensive pistol and defensive shotgun. And I'm going to tell you what, man, Pettit, he was very colorful. but he was a damn good shot. But more so, he was a fantastic instructor. And he had just these little, like, if somebody was having struggling with something, he had all these little tools in his toolbox,
right,
that he could implement. And I'm like, damn, Pettit, that's a great idea. I never thought. And it's so simple. rest his soul. He was a fantastic shot, good instructor, great instructor, good Marine, solid friend. He's the kind of guy, you know, you call at 3 o'clock in the morning. And he goes, whatever it is, I'm there for you.
Right. Well, this is Paul Markle, student of the gun. Are you familiar with him? He's another Marine.
I've heard of it, but I don't know him.
I've known him since I got in the industry, because he's been friends with Charlie, like, for forever. And he took a liking to me as well. And so this is the first time I've taken a class with him. And his son, so who I always see them at shows, about like you. I see him at SHOT, see him at NRA, and, like, that's it. So to then now be at one of their classes was absolutely a blast, just to be doing that. And like I said, then I brought two buddies with me, my buddy Ryan, who he's a dedicated shooter, but this is only his second formal class, I think. First one was a rifle by Achilles that he and I both did in 2018. So a while ago. And then my buddy Chad, I brought from the DC area. he's never had any formal training other than, you know, basic rifle handling in the Navy 20 years ago. So for him, he had a lot of fun with it. I think there was plenty of times he was a little overwhelmed. He was trying to run a SIG P365, like the original small, really small pocket ones. And I think that was his first bit of issues was I was just too small of a gun. So probably halfway through the first day, he switched out to his old Springfield XD that he's had forever and ran that so he can get full grip, full control on the gun.
Right.
And at that point, the instructors, they were all over him in the good way of like work on his draw stroke, work on his form, because he'd not really worked on much of any of that. Like, he and I don't even get to shoot very often when we get together. It's usually, you know, beers and dinner, you know.
Sure.
So he had an absolute blast doing the class like that. So I'd kind of made mention to him. I was like, dude, if I do more classes, I'm like, do you want to go? Like, I'll keep you posted on other ones we do. And he was like, yeah, man, I want to do some more. Because this was pretty awesome. I'm like, sweet. That's wicked sweet.
If y'all come for the class, let me know, man. I'd love to come here and shoot with y'all.
Well, that's the thing I was going to tell you was, I will hit you up because I think first thing I'm going to try and do is get more guys that are definitely a little more local to here to me to do. I have two local instructors that I know that are pretty good guys, and they're actually pretty affordable classes.
Okay.
But the big thing is I was talking with Jared and Paul of Student the Gun. They do a martial application of their shotgun. And I was like, dude, I want to do a shotgun class bad. I want to run my 1301 and shotgun. And they're like, dude, the shotgun class is so much fun.
Yeah.
I was like, how many guys do you need for a class? Like, what's your minimum? They're like, six. I was like, so counting friend. I'm like, I can probably put together six people, including myself, for a class. And they're like, yeah, man, you let us know. We'll make this happen. So, yes, I will keep you posted as this develops. And
I've taken a couple shotgun classes, and I've actually taught some shotgun classes. Now I'm a pump shotgun guy, so just be advised.
What I've seen in their class, they don't give a shit.
Right.
You pump, auto, whatever. Don't care. But that's like cool because, shotgun. Yeah, I think that'd be cool too. Is you and I on a class together too? And I just, this would be an absolute riot,
an absolute riot.
Oh my god, for sure, dude. Especially getting some kind of cabin somewhere we can all crash together.
I tell you what I'll do. I bring a side by side 12 gauge up there with me, and then you know, like have my pump shotgun in the bag, and he's like, "Get your guns out," and I'll just walk out there with my side by side,
side by side,
folded over, like I'm ready for the class.
And you know what? If Paul knows you're a Marine, I'm sure he'll make some smart-ass comment to you right away. And if he doesn't, he'll go, you're going to be loading a lot, pal. You know?
I don't need but two shells.
All right. Yeah. Okay, pal. So now from this class, like you said, different instructors teach different ways, but you still find a lot of commonality in them. And for the most part, Paul's curriculum to me was very much a review from a lot of other classes I've taken, which isn't a bad thing. He had some different spins on things and had us do some different engagements, required communication I hadn't done before. That was really cool. Like we had, you know, four guys sitting at a table. So like there's a guy across from you, guy to your left, guy to your right. Targets are behind us. You hear a sign to fight and you had to communicate where's everybody going to go. If targets started off, targets are behind me. So it's like, okay, where's everybody going to go? Well, we're all going to our right, you know, to break away. But the point was to be communicating everything we're doing as we're engaging threats and going down from there. And it was like, that's a different dynamic I have yet to do before. So that was actually a lot of fun. And we ran through it dry, you know, multiple times before we ever got to the point where we're drawing our guns and actually engaging targets. But beside all this, it was funny. Being at the tactical response range, I absolutely start thinking of James Yeager when at one point in time, Paul had us lying on our backs, drawing our guns and shooting in between our legs, you know, basically hitting the crotch of a target, get up to a kneeling position or sit up position, shoot the crotch. I think kneeling, then we were shooting at the chest, I think, and then standing, shooting at the chest again. And I remembered Yeager had this video that basically said, get your medical kit off the small of your fucking back. And I'm sure he probably said that bluntly because he was like, if you have a med kit that's, you know, yay thick, yay wide on a small of your back and you get knocked on your ass, you fall flat back on that, that med kit can absolutely fuck up your back.
Yeah.
And I remember him saying that thing. Yeah. Well, years later, I built my belt out. It's got shit all the way around it. So we go to lay down on our backs, and I'm laying down, and it's like I should be like this. My pelvis is up like this.
Med kit.
Because that med kit, and it's solely because of the med kit. And my buddy Ryan was right next to me, and I was like, "Hey, dude," I was like, "Do you remember Jaeger's video about the med kits?" And he's like, "Yeah." I was like, "Yeah, I get it now. I'm feeling it. This is uncomfortable as fuck, and I'm purposely laying down like this." I was like, I gotta move that damn thing, you know. Clear out the small in your back. You shouldn't be anything there. Jaeger knew his shit, man. Whether you liked his attitude or not, I always did.
I thought he was a fun dude.
I met him a couple times. I really am just saddened that I didn't get to train with him while he was alive. But his info is still the same. I mean, it's still awesome. It's on point. But so now what I'm thinking is, what's that?
He died early, didn't he? He wasn't very old.
No, he had ALS.
Oof.
Yeah, he died. What was it like? Just before Christmas?
It was just a couple years ago.
I thought it was just in 24, wasn't it?
Which was about a year ago. Just
well, like 4 months ago. But anyway, so my battle belt set up.
It's been dead longer than 4 months.
Has it been a whole year then? A year plus? I don't know, man.
I don't want to lie to you.
Let's look it up. I can't remember either, man.
No, you're on like doggone.
Yeah. James Jaeger. He died in 2022? What? Really?
Yeah.
Damn, time flies, dude. Holy shit. Wow. So, thanks to James Jaeger, though, yeah, I'll be reorienting my battle belt. And one of the things, Hunter, I kind of would laugh about, I've got a room for it to move to, and it's a matter of just taking off my, I have a loose admin pouch I use for my lever action. That's gonna come off. I gotta take that off, move my med kit up there, and it's like, damn it, am I gonna have to build another damn belt so I can use for my lever action? It's like, shit.
Do you work with high speed gear at all or no?
I have some of their products. I don't know those guys.
Oh man, they're good people. I've got a bunch of their stuff. I've been in their plant.
I remember when you did that.
Swansboro. Yeah, good people, man.
So they make good shit, man. Their tacos are awesome.
Yeah.
That's like my go-to pistol pouch or rifle pouch.
Maybe next shot show, we'll ease over there doing an intro.
That'd be cool. That'd be way cool.
Are you making it? I'm assuming you're going to be NRA.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll be there for Friday and Saturday. I'm heading home. I have the wife and kids with me because it's spring break. So I'm going to work the show Friday, Saturday, and then Sunday I'm going home.
I'm going to try to make it.
Are you?
I'm going to try.
I mean, it's Atlanta. It's not that far. I mean, well, no. You're in Raleigh. I think Charlotte's closer, but.
Well, it's a couple hours.
Yeah.
But it was fine. But, you know, in the past 6 weeks, I've put a little over $3,000 in that truck.
Right. No, I know. You've said that damn, that fixture repair daily is like, you know, runs a toll on you.
Come on now. Damn it. It's an 89. You know, so it's 36 years old, and it's all
okay. It could be a 2019 and still be putting money into it.
Let me tell you something, fella. I got a 2014 F-350 with a 6.7 power stroke.
Uh-huh.
And I can pull my excavator, which is about 10,000 pounds, on a 2,500 pound trailer with 3 yards of crushing run in the back. At 75 miles an hour. And that truck's like, no problem.
Okay.
So
I didn't say that. I never said it didn't have any power.
Oh, that's how much you pull the hinges off of Hell's Gate.
I just said fix repair daily. That's all.
You might want to look at Dodge and Chevrolet's doing, you know.
Dude, I have no loyalty to any domestic brand. I've had Chevrolets rental car wise. I like Hemis, like in the Jeeps. The Ford Expedition was fine. Actually, I hate Chevy Tahoes. I think those are the most underpowered pieces of shit. I think most of Chevy's trucks are underpowered pieces of shit too, honestly.
That Duramax diesel is not what people crack it up to be. Probably get a little hate
mail. I ain't even talking about diesel on that front. I'm just talking in general. Different friends have had Suburbans and Tahoes over the years, and every time I drive one, I'm like, I feel like I'm flooring it. And it's like, this is an 8. This is a V8. I'm like, doesn't this thing like shit and get? Like, yeah. My Nissan Frontier I had would shit and get. My FJ will shit and get. It's like, okay, whatever.
That 89 I got, 260 in about 15 minutes.
That's a whole other thing. Oh, hey, Tucker.
But it's you know, but now here again, it'll pull. That's a Mitchell pull, but it ain't no speed damon.
Right. Well, here, I had a random thought today as I was messing around with some guns in the safe. We know you're a 1911 fan. Hell, I'm a 1911 fan, but you're by far a larger 1911 fan than I am. But we're not talking about 1911s. We don't give a shit. Those are single action guns. Who cares? Why are you flipping me off for? I just said, who cares?
I'm trying to be part of the conversation.
Double action over striker fire? Fuck. Or striker fire over double action?
Double action over striker fire without a shadow of a doubt.
And why is that?
A, striker fire is fucking stupid.
You fucking retard.
No! Plus, all right, here we go. Good.
Oh, don't go no deep dive. I just want a quick, easy response out of you.
No, you didn't ask now. All right. So here.
It's getting all serious, everybody. Here we go.
So being a gun writer, I'm privy to a lot of things the general public is not privy to. And so I got a buddy who works at Glock. And he sent me some of the notes from when they were designing the original Glock 17.
Right.
And Gaston comes in and goes, look, I want to make a pistol that is not only super cheap to make, but it's got to have the worst trigger imaginable.
Oh, you're so full of shit.
And then he said, now listen, I want it to, the trigger's going to be so bad that we got to put a safety in it. Ergonomically, I want you to think about holding a 2x4, okay, and trying to take your trigger finger and push an 8-penny nail into said 2x4. This is where we're at with it. That was the that's, and I'm quoting.
Yeah, right. I'm sure.
I'm quoting Gaston when he's like, ergonomics and trigger pull on the Glock. That's what he said. And he goes, watch, we're gonna make the shittiest plastic gun imaginable, and I'm gonna sell 6 trillion of them. You know why?
Yeah,
marketing. You know, he looked at Kimber and he went, well, if they could make a piece of shit and sell a million of them, hell, I can too.
I hate to break it to you, though.
Glock's not a piece of shit. Glock protection.
I say, hate to break it to you. It's not, it's gone well beyond piece of shit when considering Glock has become as ubiquitous as a 1911. The fact that everybody makes them now, based exactly, not just like VP9s, there's Glock genetics, Walther's Glock genetics, Canic, which are Walther's Glock genetics, XD's Glock genetics, but no, strip now, you strip make Gen 3 Glocks. Gen 3 Glock is like a new era 1911, flat out.
Except it's just, I get it that it works. You know, Glock works in the same way a hammer works.
Sure.
Okay, it works. But it's not, there's nothing about it that's pleasant. Ergonomically, it's fucking shit.
Yeah, they're all right. Some of the newer aftermarket, or some of the newer clones, or whatever you want to call them, are better.
Right.
Shadow Systems have more like a 1911 grip.
How can I take a firearm manufacturer serious when they send me a fucking gun and the sights are plastic? I mean,
okay, well. Now you're going brand specific. I just said double action over striker.
I'm sorry.
I mean, like, my VP9, these are metal sights on my VP9 right here. I mean.
So, anywho, striker fired has got it's a god-awful trigger. A lot of pickup, a lot of creep, a lot of over-travel. You know, and I know that you've got companies out there like Lone Wolf.
Yeah, but I don't care. But no, don't forget the aftermarket shit. Stock guns, stock triggers.
You're trying to make chicken salad out of chicken shit.
Right.
So, number one, and here's the thing: contrary to popular belief, your trigger pull has a tremendous amount to do with your mechanical accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got a really nice, crisp, straight pull, you know, breaking it 5 pounds. I ain't talking about no, I got a 6-ounce trigger. You know,
yeah. No, fuck all that.
But, you know, that fucking thing they got with the dude dolly hanging down, and it's, you know, it's 6-7 pounds. I mean, what's the trigger pull in your Glock in inches? Oh, we measured the trigger pull in feet, you know, because it's this far. You know, I start pulling the trigger on Monday, and by Wednesday, I broke the shot. So, no, Striker Fire triggers are awful. I don't like them. They're not good. They're not ergonomic. They're not smooth. And they're really, for the most part, untunable. You can tune them a bit.
Yeah, but your tuning really and truly is just wearing them out faster. I mean,
right? It's, you know, really, you take a 1911, and you know, so, got somebody know what they're doing—a real gunsmith, and he can get in there and he can put a knife edge on that sear.
Right.
He can clean up them hammer hooks and maybe shorten them hammer hooks just a cat hair. And now you're talking about, you know, you got a pistol out there, you shoot NRA bullseye matches with a 0.5-pound trigger that's safe and beautiful.
Okay, let's come back to this, since you're still taking the 1911s. Damn you, shut up.
No, I was making
I know, I'm just giving you a hard time. So, okay, double action for single action, because I for one, personally, I don't care. It makes a difference to me. Like, I trained myself and started with 1911. I always love 1911s. Second handgun I ever got was a USP in 45, so it's a double single action. And the next gun was a striker fired gun, and I got hooked into the same trigger pull every single time striker fire bit, until years later I found the CZ, the P09, double action, single action. And that gun blew me away at how much I was like, oh, I could deal with a double action first pull. Back in the day when I didn't know shit, it was like, oh God, this is so terrible. It's so heavy. Oh God. Basically being a little bitch.
Yeah.
You know, but I can say that enough mediocre striker fire triggers, you come back to a double action, dude, when somebody says fight or the buzzer goes off, you don't think twice about that shit. You draw, you get on sight, on target, you pull that double action shot, break it, and everything after that is so much more crisp, fluid, smooth, that single action. That's pretty damn awesome.
One of my favorite pistols in the world, and I shit you not, is a CZ SP01 Tactical.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's a fighting handgun.
And, yeah.
I like it like 1911s here.
Right.
And then the CZ line of double action, single action.
Right.
Hammer, what I'm going to call hammer fired.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The CZ line hammer fired guns are right here.
Yeah. I get that.
I mean,
I totally get that. The Omega, I had the Omega trigger, which is probably their lesser trigger in CZ's realm, but it's awesome. I have no problem with that thing.
And you can at will switch it from a decocker to a safety.
Right. Which I just leave the decocker on there. The safety. The safety, if it felt more 1911 like, well, that's the thing.
It doesn't have much of a ledge on it to get
out. No, and you know what's funny is, like, I grabbed one gun recently that was a DASA, and it had a manual safety, and I was like, oh shit, this is actually bit 1911. Like, I could deal with using that one, but otherwise just decock and leaving double action. But now, here, I'll say this, and this, you'll probably completely disagree with me, and I don't give a shit. You can.
You're wrong.
If I'm teaching somebody relatively new, I think I'm still going to go with a striker fire on them than a double action, single action, because that double action is still going to feel longer and heavy to them. I don't want them. I want them thinking about that weight less and just go with this more simplicity of.
Really?
I think so. Because the difference is, they get so used to this, and they go to a double action, they don't even notice it. Even if it's really heavy, they won't even notice it.
You know what I start people out with?
A double action.
A Ruger Mark IV 22-45.
Oh, yeah, it's just 22, yeah.
And that's...
Okay, well, I'm not saying, yeah, let me back
up. That style trigger. That style, that is what I start people out with. And... Because, and here's my maybe my thinking is wrong, but with that 22-45, they're not having to train their trigger fundamentals.
Sure.
First thing we teach is safety.
No, I agree with that. Let me back up. I guess I don't mean, like, I guess I did say new shooter. I'm thinking wrong level new shooter. That's like brand new shooter. Yes, you're absolutely right.
Okay.
Ruger 22 pistol, absolutely. Somebody that's like my buddy Chad, he hasn't shot in a long time, and he wants to buy a new handgun, and he wants to get some training reps in before going to a class. I would put him on a striker fired, center fire pistol, before a double action, single action.
I think my bias would keep me from doing that because
I can believe that.
Anybody that's coming to me like, oh, I really want to buy a Glock. I'm like, oh, don't.
Don't.
Great. Don't do that. Don't do that.
Well, that's my buddy. He, I told you he's got an XD that he's had for 20 years. And he's got his 365.
I'll be honest with you.
That's fine. I mean, I have mine. I've run the shit out of mine. It's laser accurate. They're fine. But he was like, yeah, I think I want to get something like a newer full size gun. I was like, well, what do you want? He's like, something striker fired. I was like, honestly, dude, Walther PDP. Just look at those. Go put your hand in one of those things and get one of those. Best striker fire trigger, flat out. Excellent ergonomics.
You ought to try that Ruger RXM.
Yeah, I do, because I think I put my hand on it a tiny bit at Gaos, and that was it.
Now I reviewed it.
Yeah.
I didn't love it. Now,
well, it's because it's still basically a Glock. I mean,
right. It is, except it's got a whole lot more going for it than Glock does.
But it's still a Glock.
Right.
I love my HKs, but a VP9, it is still a striker fired, aka
right.
a Glock. I mean,
but now,
like you said, there's only so much refinement you can do.
Chad's wife, Krista, who shoots a handful of times a year.
Right.
She came out and was in the video. She picked that damn thing up. And, you know, at 25, 30 feet, she's banging steel. Like doing
effortlessly.
Well.
Right.
And she'll come out here with her. She's got a shield.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she's 50% at best.
Right.
That shield. You know, and we try to walk through the fundamentals, but she doesn't
sure.
shoot enough. But she come out here cold and pick that RXM up. I was like, ding, 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 ding.
Yep, it's not cold now. You're not thinking about it, just going.
And I'm watching her face and she's confused of how well she is. She's like, wow. I'm like, do it again. Here's another mag. And she did it again.
Right.
You know, and I wound up, Chad bought that pistol from Ruger when I was done with it. There was nothing bad I could say about it except what ergonomically, it was a little better than Glock. The trigger
right.
was a little better than Glock.
Right.
Had way better sights on it.
But it still just falls in that it's a striker-fired pistol.
Yeah, it's just not my speed.
Right.
But Chad bought it from Ruger when I was done, and he gave it to his wife. And she is at least 50% better with that pistol out the box than she was her carry gun for years.
Yeah.
So I was like, I can appreciate the fact that Ruger has taken this Glock platform and improved upon it.
Right.
In my opinion, it's a great improvement.
Well, it's something you kind of got my mind spinning into is like that more people, and probably women in particular, need to go to a range that has a bunch of guns to rent and
yeah.
rent a bunch of shit. I think I told you this before. Maybe if I haven't, who cares? I'll tell it again. One couple I shoot USPSA with, buddy's wife, Yuki, she was running a Canik, like a full-size Canik pistol, and she runs it, and man, at times it looked like she's like not even controlling the gun. And after I shot with them two matches when I borrowed the Echelon from Patton a few years ago, they asked me what I thought of the Echelon. I was like, dude, this is hands down one of the best striker fired service pistols out there, period. It's that good. And the next match, then a month later, I see Yuki had an Echelon. I was like, did you get an Echelon? She's like, oh yeah, yeah. She goes, my husband got me an Echelon. I was like, oh, that's cool. Watch her shoot. Dude, the gun for me is flat. It's extremely flat shooting. Yuki shooting it, extremely flat shooting. That girl went from hitting targets like, top of the shoulder, C-zone, to you know, maybe an A, but a lot of times in a D zone to like double alphas everywhere all the time. Just some difference in that gun versus the Canic. It was insanely flat for her. And that's why people need to go test shit. Really, I mean, like I'm old enough that I don't give a shit. I'll just go, if a gun looks cool and it feels good in my hand, I'll buy it. I don't give a shit.
But
anybody else, they need to go rent shit and try shit.
And that brings me to a point.
Yeah.
So buying a handgun or a firearm in general, but a handgun specifically, is a very personal thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And
so like when I'm doing a review, I get people that are shooters to come shoot these guns. And which is great because it looks good on camera. But having somebody like Andrew Barnes of Barnes Precision Machine, having Andrew come in and shoot a test gun.
Right.
It does me no service, because if there's something going on with it that his mind's like, I don't like this, he will unconsciously adapt, and it doesn't dawn on him. You know, I mean, he'll get out there and run a plate rack with a high point. Excuse me.
Right.
You know, and not that there's anything wrong with that, but you know, he's a 2011 guy. You know, he's got the what is that manufacturer that, you know, the damn $3,000-$4,000 2011s?
Staccato.
Staccato. He's got a couple of those, and you know, but he'll pick up a damn high point, you know, YC9, and ding 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 ding. And I'm like, what'd you think about it? He goes, well, it's fine.
Yeah, it's
good. I'm like, no. You know, what'd you think of the trigger? He's like, I don't know. I just shot it. So, but you get a newbie in, somebody that's not a very familiar, and they're like, oh, I like this trigger, or the grip is too big, or the front sight was weird for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, that's the difference too. Like being at the counter messing with the gun versus being on the range messing with the gun. Mm-hmm. You know, the people were, I think somebody asked me about the trigger of the YC9, you know, last weekend. I was like, who gives a shit? I was like, look what I'm doing.
Right.
Look at the holes. It speaks for itself. And, oh, that's what it was. Paul, at one point, came up. He wanted us, like, we were live rounds. He wanted us, it was fire, you know, so break the shot. And then he wants to feel that reset before breaking another shot.
That's so hard to do, especially if you're in a flying hurry.
Well, no. We were, like, taking our time. It was literally break one shot, hold it back, and feel the reset. And Paul comes up and he goes, high points don't really have much of a reset, do they? And I went, no, dude, it's pretty much let all the way out. I was like, I'm good. Don't sweat it. And he was like, yeah, all right. You know, because why do we look at it is my fundamentals. It's fundamentals or fundamentals or fundamentals. Trigger control, trigger control, trigger control.
Right.
I don't give a shit if it's a 12-pound trigger or if it's a 3-pound trigger. Yeah, 12-pound trigger, you're going to be a little more tired after shooting fast. Double taps of 12 pounds kind of sucks. But beyond that, you just shoot. Just don't overthink it and shoot, you know.
But a lot of people, especially newer shooters, Dave, aren't able to wrap their head around that.
It's for sure.
Someone like yourself.
Well, dude, like I said, I've been in the same boat. You know, my USP, that double action pull, I was like, oh, God, double action pull. I just rack it and just shoot it. I'd never decock it and shoot it, you know, because being a new idiot shooter. Now, I don't give a shit. Hand it to me, decock it, I'll blast away.
Right.
It's you know.
When you go and shoot somebody that's new, shoot with somebody that's new, and you're watching them, it makes you think of all the stuff that you, as a seasoned shooter, gloss over in your brain.
Right. Like, how, like you know, it's so funny, like, guys in their AR triggers, too. That's bad or worse than 1911 triggers and Striker Fire trigger guys. You know, it's like, oh, if I don't have this fancy dangled light, blah, blah, blah.
AR gold, baby. AR gold or guys like... Which I love guys. You don't.
Oh, no, I do. I love my guys' trigger. It's fucking phenomenal. I've got a trigger tech as well. It's phenomenal. I've got the Q's trigger, the what they call it, the best damn trigger ever, literally best trigger ever made. It's really nice. But at the same time, I can break hits at 200 yards without thinking about it with a mil-spec trigger. I'm like, I don't care.
I shot expert.
I don't care.
For 4 years.
Right.
What a wore-out-ass M16A2. And it had
it's funny. You say wore out, and that was actually because it was smooth as shit because it was so wore out, probably.
Well, that could be. You know, but it won't know Geisley with a little prep and a wall and a
With a carrot break.
Yeah. You know, it was like,
breaks like a carrot.
You know, you're like, yeah, yeah, boo-hoo. Anyway.
Yeah.
But
people get too hung up on that kind of shit.
But it was, and here's, then that's the thing. When the feather starts flying, figuratively speaking, of course, are you going to notice a 4 pound versus a 6, 7, 8 pound trigger?
Fuck no.
You know, I mean,
I feel like that's the same thing like figured competition, USPSA. That timer goes off, you ain't noticing that.
And but you know what? You know why people say they do? Marketing.
Oh, for sure.
You know, I watched the, you might roll your eyes at this, but I watched this guy today. He had a Facebook reel. And he started in on a 6.5 Creedmoor. And I'm like, all right, because, you know, I don't give a shit anything made past about 1959. And, you know, I mean, all right, give me 85. Give me 85. And he's like, you know why everybody loves the 6.5 Creedmoor? Marketing. He's like, there is a dozen rounds that's been out decades that can do everything the 6.5 Creedmoor can do and better, but marketing. You come up with something and you convince people they need it.
Yeah.
It was Bill Wilson, bless his heart, when he come up with the shock buff. You know what I'm talking about? The shock buff, it's a little piece of polyurethane. Or not polyurethane. And it goes, it's a little piece of like polymer.
Yeah, a little wedge.
You pull your fucking recoil spring off your guy.
Oh,
right,
no.
Not on your 1911.
Oh, yes. Okay, sorry. Now I do know what you're talking about.
And you slide it down there and you put your recoil spring back on. And Bill Wilson come up with those and he was selling them. You bought them in a little pack of 12 for,
right,
you know, $6 or $8. And, you know, I looked at that shit. And it was going to save your gun. You know, save it battering the receiver or the frame.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself.
Marketing.
And so I went and talked to my gunsmith, Tom Bellevue, who was an old crotchety bastard. And he had a Colt that he'd been shooting for I don't know how long. And he, you know, and I said. And I was up there one day, and I said, Tom, what do you think about those fucking shock buffs? It's a joke, right? And he pulls his Colt out, and he throws it on the counter. And there ain't a bit of bluing. There ain't a bit of finish on it. It's just kind of a
awesome, well-used.
Well-used. And he goes, I got 200,000 rounds through that pistol. It's the original slide, original receiver. He's like, I've shot out 3 or 4 barrels. I've gone through it a couple times. He goes, but you know, if it's going to make a 250,000 rounds,
right?
I don't think you need a little fucking piece of plastic.
No.
That. And here's the. So it was cute, and he made a bunch of money. But here's the thing that it become a problem because over time and use. Now he's like, you got to change them every magazine. No, I'm kidding. I don't remember, but.
No, I know, but it was, a couple thousand rounds or whatever.
But if you forgot to change them, they would come apart.
Yeah, put fouling into your gun now.
And then they tie your gun up.
Yeah.
And I remember I bought a Colt Gold Cup National Match, Series 70. Oh, man, this thing was decked the fuck out. All the control, it was, somebody had it refinished, and it was kind of a black tee. But
did you think about trying one?
Say that again.
Did you think about trying one in your 1911? It was Gold Cup?
No, it had one in it.
Oh.
Oh, you know, and all the controls were or polished stainless from Pacmire. It was gorgeous. But when I took it apart, it had a, and I knew it was an old one because it was clear. And I put it back in the gun. I'm like, you know what? Let's just see what. And I shot the piss out of that 45. And over the years, that bunch of thing began to come apart, and it tied the gun up.
Yeah.
So
let's see. Yeah, you put shit in your gun that can rot, you're asking for malfunctions.
Exactly. If you gotta have it, guys, if you're out there like, oh, gotta put that shock buff, then make it your range gun.
Right.
Don't put that as your defense. Because if it can break, it will, and more than likely it's gonna be a very unopportune time.
Yep.
Inopportune.
So here's a total complete subject change for you. Movies. I've told my oldest boy, I was like, that I want to get him to actually sit down and watch the Lord of the Rings trilogy here, like sooner or later, because he's a massive Star Wars nut. So I was like, you need to watch Lord of the Rings trilogy because it's every bit as good, if not actually, it's probably better.
Not better.
But
it maybe is good. I'll give you that.
Lord of the Rings trilogy?
You're talking about Peter Jackson.
Yeah. Not The Hobbit, the Lord of the Rings trilogy. That's like the best trilogy there ever was, in my opinion.
Over Star Wars.
Yeah.
No.
Star Wars is great, but Lord of the Rings is the most, from beginning to end, yeah.
No. But go ahead. It's
okay. It's fine. It's fine. We can disagree later. Hi, Tucker. But I thought, you know what? Before he watches Lord of the Rings, he needs to watch some other ones that are older that, I think if he watched Lord of the Rings first, you watch anything older, he's going to be like, this is kind of lame.
You're talking about some of the first iterations before Peter Jackson got a hold of
it. Well, no. I mean movies in general. And this is what I'm getting to. I bought the Blu-ray of Ridley Scott's 1985 Tom Cruise, Tim Curry Legend. Do you remember that one?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, Tim Curry, the Lord of Darkness, the big, huge horns that wrapped around.
Yeah,
dude, it's fucking epic looking. Yeah, I bought the Blu-ray of that has the theatrical cut, which the score is done by Tangerine Dream. And the director's cut has a full orchestral score by Jerry Goldsmith. And I think there's more to the director's cut, but I don't know. I've never seen it. I've only seen the theatrical cut. But I was like, we're going to watch this movie tomorrow night. And then I think the next thing I'm going to have them watch is I think I talked about it, was The 13th Warrior with Antonio Banderas. Mm-hmm. Do you ever recall that one?
I watched it a couple of times. You know what? It wasn't my favorite.
Okay. I that one always like stuck with me. I thought that was a really cool badass. But action-wise, the thing, like both those movies, their effects and visuals are fine. But I feel like their action, the sword fighting, and everything just doesn't compare once Lord of the Rings came out. They just took everything to the next level.
No. Haven't watched Excalibur.
And I can't say about Excalibur because I haven't watched Excalibur in so long, I don't remember.
The medieval sword fighting in Excalibur, is probably comparable.
You're going to be, I know you'll be a little partial because you really love that movie too.
I do, but, and you know, let's don't even take into account inflation, so to speak, the time gap.
Right.
If pressed, if somebody's like, hey, what is better? Pick what's the best of the three of the Lord of the Rings? Return of the King?
I'm partial to the Fellowship of the Ring.
Okay. That is not as good a movie as Excalibur. To me. Okay. I don't think any movies, any of those three movies, can equate to the quality of what Excalibur is. Even though it's so many years difference. And part of it is because, of course, now, here you go. I like Star Trek better than The Next Generation.
Sure.
Because they didn't rely, and I'm not saying this is really holds true to the Lord of the Rings trilogy, but maybe a little bit. They didn't have the ability to generate amazing special effects.
Right.
So what they really had to do is act.
Yeah.
And they had to make the movie through dialogue and act and what special effects they could muster up. Versus today, or even when Lord of the Rings come out, they're like, oh, we can CGI. You need a dragon? Fine.
I get that. Excuse me. And to me, that's kind of like where there's the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And The Hobbit. And The Hobbit trilogy is the whole, we can just CGI it. Because I feel like The Hobbit trilogy looks like shit.
I don't know that I saw.
Yeah, you're not missing it. I mean, come on, dude. It was one book. They stretched into three films. I mean, at least Lord of the Rings, it was three books, and therefore it was three movies. I mean,
it was amazing. But, man, I'm going to tell you, and I love you, Dave. I swear, I love you like we're kin. But to try to beat Return or even Empire...
Well, now you're going individual films. I'm just saying as a trilogy as a whole.
Yeah, but I mean, so
Lord of the Rings beats it. You know why? Because it is truly a cohesive trilogy all the way through. Star Wars is not. A New Hope is like here, and then Empire obviously is a better movie, but then it's Empire and Return of the Jedi in their cohesiveness. Star Wars, the original Star Wars, it's a little rough, like in that sense, like because it was such a pioneering thing. Right. I will always love it. I will always appreciate it. But therefore, I feel like the trilogy as a whole, Lord of the Rings beats it out as a better trilogy.
Man,
I didn't say Star Wars is a bad trilogy because it's not.
But
Lord of the Rings is a better trilogy.
When Luke walks into to Jabba the Hutt's lair.
Well, it's Return of the Jedi. Yeah.
And he is gonna he's there to get Han.
Yeah, it's epic.
And he's the Jedi.
It's great. It's great.
It's, you know, and I'm like, my heart's pumping. I mean, I watch it right now and I can play this in my brain and I'm like,
but you're just drawing individual scenes. But you're just drawing individual scenes. Like, okay, there's next time I see this meme, I need to send it to you. And it's a trilogy rating meme. And I agree with it. It does have Lord of the Rings as like the best trilogy. I think it has Star Wars as like the second best trilogy. What was the third best trilogy had listed? I don't remember now. I'm just going to look for it. You know, because like I love with more passion than anything is the Alien franchise.
Yeah.
And it's a roller coaster up and down of awesome. Awesome and okay, and they're mixed bag from there. But you know what? It's as a trilogy, 1, 2, and 3, it's definitely down lower by a good bit because Alien 3 was not what we expected. It's completely different than we wanted. But I still love 3. I still think 3 is a great, dark, grimy, depressing film. It's just not what we all wanted, you know, back in the day. You know,
you want to talk about ruining a trilogy?
Clerks
3.
Oh, we talked about that. Because I didn't realize that there was, you know.
The fuck were you thinking, Kevin Smith?
Yeah.
Clerks was great. Clerks 2, amazing.
Here, I'm gonna throw a hot one out there for you.
Oh.
I'm going to throw a hot one out there for you. Give me your opinion. RoboCop.
I struggle to enjoy RoboCop.
What? Are you okay? Fine, forget the sequels then. 87's RoboCop, really?
Yeah,
that is a masterpiece, dude.
Is it though?
Yes. Oh my god.
For me, it's good. It's good. Is it great? Kirkwood Smith was great in it.
Oh, he was fucking great. Ronnie Cox, everybody was great. Ronnie Cox was great. Weller was great.
It was a good movie, but wow. Is it one that I remember with great fondness? No.
Oh my god! Okay, well, it's fun to discover new things together.
Right? It's okay. It's a good movie. It's not fucking Casablanca. Okay.
I still need to watch that one. I've not seen it all the way through ever. And we've talked about that.
Casablanca is the best film ever made.
I need to see if it's streaming somewhere and actually watch it.
Bravo with John Wayne.
Oh, here's a random one I'll throw out there to you. I kept seeing this on Prime. 1965, Planet of the Vampires. I mean, terrible title. Like, it's like, this can't be good. Prime keeps throwing it at me in my suggestions. I'm like, I'll look it up. The one I wouldn't turn it on. I was like, well, I'll look it up real quick on my phone and read about it. It was like, okay, this sounds like it could be interesting. It sounds a lot like Alien, like Ridley Scott's Alien. I was like, huh. I give it a watch. So when I was a kid, I couldn't stand older movies, like much older than, I don't know, probably mid-70s. And mainly because I don't know, man, this is weird. Mainly because the music in them always took me out of the film because they were so like big bombastic, like there's the villain, bum, 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 bum. Like, I'm just like, that's shitty.
Right.
But probably because I was spoiled. Like, I watched Aliens before watching Alien. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I watched Aliens before Alien, you know? So like my young childhood watching epic horror sci-fi movies was Aliens, Predator, Terminator, RoboCop, you know, Star Wars was always there. And then going back, like, I remember laughing at Planet of the Apes because my brothers laughed at Planet of the Apes. And my dad tore into my shit. He's like, have you ever even watched Planet of the Apes? I'm like, no. He goes, watch it and shut your mouth. And I caught, like, they ran the first three films on USA one weekend. And the moment the first one started, I see, like, just the effects. I'm like, this is corny as shit. Then Heston's sitting there talking. And I was like, all right, this is looking better.
Yeah.
And then when he goes into hypersleep and Jerry Goldsmith's score kicked in, now, which, mind you, even, man, probably before 9 or 10, I was more into movie composers than I was anything else. And I still am. So Goldsmith's score kicks in. I'm like, oh, dude, Goldsmith did Alien. I'm like, he did this score? This should be good. And that score is fucking epic in that whole movie. So I was like, all right, I'll dip. This is from what? That was what? 68, I think, Planet of the Apes. I was like, I'll look up some older stuff. You know, I catch Logan's Run, another Jerry Goldsmith score.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking solid all the way through. And then the real mind blower, though, I couldn't get into Star Trek, the original series, when I was younger. My dad would watch it, and I don't know, I just, something about it, maybe it looked too cheesy to me. I couldn't get into it. Now I can watch it and appreciate it.
Yeah.
But he made me sit down and watch Forbidden Planet with Leslie Nielsen, which obviously was before Star Trek. And it had an all-electronic sound mix. I wouldn't even call it a score, but it really is. It's fucking unreal. So ahead of its time. That was 56. So I see people talking about this Planet of the Vampires and that it has some really, you know, close ties to Alien. Well, all right, let's give it a shot. I fire this movie up right away, the score. It is like this electronic, foreboding, just sound constantly. I'm like, this is cool for a movie from 65. I'm like, all right. Sets are a little big. It could be a little bit tighter for believability of the tech and shit. But come to find out, they land on this planet and they find their another ship of theirs. Everybody's dead. And it's called Planet of the Vampires, but it really is more like a zombie movie to a degree. But it's because another life form used their bodies and basically wanted to infect the rest of their crew as a symbiote. Symbiosis, you know, living, because they're like, we want to get this planet. We need to survive. But all while they're exploring, they find an alien craft with these giant skeletons. I'm like, dude, the jockey from Alien? Like, holy shit, this is pretty wild. I start reading some more. Apparently, Dan O'Bannon did actually steal the giant skeletons from Planet of the Vampires and used it in his story for Alien.
No way.
Yeah, so it's like, good God. And apparently, Ridley Scott was even saying that Planet of the Vampires had a little inspiration in him and the way he shot Alien. It was like, okay, this movie was no Planet of the Apes. It was no Forbidden Planet. But it was absolutely worth watching for being older. And it was Italian, too. What's that?
It's an older movie. Older,
yeah, older. From 65.
Okay,
1965. Yeah, it was worth watching. It's not great. It's not bad, but worth watching, man.
Okay. I like weird shit like that, man. So,
yeah.
Well, you know, one thing I like to touch on that I was thinking about today is I've got a question for you, and I'm asking you the question so I can answer it as well.
Okay.
You're into metal.
Yeah. I sent you my taste of metal.
Right. So, give me one of the most underrated, or one or two of the most underrated metal bands you feel.
I don't know if they really are that underrated, but I know I found them pretty late, and I feel like they're not as widely known. It would be In This Moment is the one I told you about. That chick's like 40 some odd years old, and they've been a band for I think over a decade, if not two decades. It was just kind of like, where the hell are they at? They should be no more because they fucking rock.
Okay.
But yeah. So In This Moment, I'd say that'd be like my immediate one that comes to mind.
Okay. I looked them up. They've got some pretty good stuff going on. I cannot argue that. You know, one band that I was really into in high school, man, and I'm surprised a number of people around my age have never heard of them, is Rigor Mortis.
Now, I've only heard of it because I know you mentioned it before, but I've not familiar with them at all.
They are.
Other than you talking about it.
It's very complex if you listen to the lyrics. And Manowar. Do you remember Manowar?
Vaguely.
They were vaguely. They were dressed in furs and wielded axes. And, yeah.
That I don't recall. That I don't recollect, no.
Oh, well. It was something. Candy and I were walking her foster dog, and we got talking about music. And of course, now, anytime I got a Pandora channel that I like, and she's like,
right.
Turn that down. I'm like, oh, you want to hear music? I pick my phone and say, turn it down. And I'm like, I ain't even got my shit fired up. But, we got to talk. She likes, old jazz.
Okay.
Old jazz, like 40s, 50s jazz.
Yeah. It's got its own vibe, man. It really does.
She loves it. And she's turned me on to some of it that is great. Some of it, not my speed.
Sure. But I think I feel like that's kind of jazz as a whole too, though, for me.
Yeah. It's hit or miss for me. And of course, I also think it's a mood.
Yeah.
But anyhow, that was something I wanted to squeeze in before we wrapped up. I don't know what our time frame is, but
yeah, we should probably wrap it up. We're about an hour and a half here.
Well, man, I thoroughly enjoyed it as always.
Making more notes here, trying to fill out for the for descriptions for the videos. So I didn't just say we talked about stuff.
Get your ass to work.
No. Which I will say is, we're still recording, we talk about it. So I've been using one service thing to push out just the actual podcast of this.
Okay.
And which that's fine, dandy and all. And so it says it pushes it out to Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Well, I can't fucking find it. And I think I found the Apple Podcast ones because I have to create a creator account now. The Apple Podcast is like, oh my fucking God. Early in the week, I created an RSS account. So I could create one because apparently that's a way of knowing podcasts are there.
Right.
But then people talk about how you can post as many episodes as you want. But I try hitting a second episode and it's like, nope, paywall to add more. I'm like, I'm not doing another paid service when I use one already to submit audio shit. But it's just like the backside of creating all these other bloody accounts to push our shit out there. So it becomes a legitimate podcast is a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Absolute pain in the ass.
Run a good website.
But we're getting there. Oh, dude, my website's terrible.
No, I'm going to talk about all the money.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's the thing. It's got to be all affordable. But, so we're slowly getting ourselves there.
Well, I'm thoroughly enjoying the legitimate time we spend together.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I guess, if the podcast by itself doesn't ever really take off, I just strip it back to doing just the absolute freebie version of what we do and post it on YouTube and Rumble and,
it's still fun.
Fucking so be it.
When I posted, we usually get a couple hundred views.
That's way more than I'm getting, so that's awesome.
So, it's something.
Yeah. But, yeah, I guess we should just wrap it up from there. This is our ninth episode, man. So,
wow.
We'll be back to do this again for sure because, we haven't gotten bored yet, right?
I look forward to it. I really do.
Well, as usual, I guess we'll say this. Where can people find you, man?
RangeHot.com.
Wow, that was simple enough.
Oh, you want my address?
No. No, because it is that simple. Same thing. I'm at livefire-media.com. All the social links from X, Instagram, and Facebook, and Hunter, same thing. RangeHot.com. It's all there. So, till next time, people.
If I don't see you before Christmas, don't forget to hang your balls on the tree.
On that note.